Hi, it's Elise Lunan, host of Pulling the Thread. I'm thrilled to be joined today by the brilliant psychotherapist and best-selling author, Phil Stutz. High schoolers are busy, but no one's too busy to help fight cancer. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society is looking for their next Student Visionaries of the Year. Could that be your child? High schoolers who participate in the 7-week philanthropic leadership development program gain valuable life skills like project management, communication, financial literacy, and entrepreneurship. Forming strong teams behind them, they fundraise for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society in honor of a pediatric blood cancer survivor right in their local community. Most importantly, this campaign is an opportunity for high schoolers to engage in meaningful work within their community and make a real impact on the lives of blood cancer patients and their families. Sound like something your child might be interested in? You can learn more about Student Visionaries of the Year or even nominate a student at lls.org/students. That's lls.org/students. Hi, it's Elise Lunan, host of Pulling the Thread. On this show, we pull apart the web in which we all live to understand who we are and why we're here. Pulling the Thread is about big questions: why we do what we do, how we can understand our own experiences within a larger spiritual and historical context, the ways in which we might begin to understand ourselves and each other better, and what's required to heal ourselves and our world. I'll be joined in conversation by luminaries and wise elders, those who have laid tracks in their work and lives to help us bring meaning and understanding to a world that often feels chaotic and overwhelming. My hope is that these conversations spark moments of resonance and plant tiny seeds of awareness so that we might all collectively learn and grow.
If there's this part of you that you think is inferior, the weak spot, something you're ashamed of, etc., that's one of these things where if you believe it's true, there's a part of the human soul, we call it part X, that doesn't want you to have any kind of forward motion. Doesn't like it. It wants to render your life failure. It wants you to never reach any of your potentials. And it wants you to hate yourself, which is the biggest thing. So the genesis of the tools came from the idea we have to be active about dealing with this.
So says Phil Stutz, the creator of the tools. You might know Phil from his best-selling book of the same name, or its sequel, Coming Alive, which he co-wrote with his partner Barry Michaels, or you might know him from the Netflix documentary Stutz, which is a profile of him as a beloved psychotherapist who doesn't practice in a particularly traditional way. What you might not know is that Phil is actually a psychiatrist. He received his MD from NYU and then abandoned the standard approach, feeling like he wasn't helping patients at all. He created the tools to do exactly that, to provide practices for people to move through life's obstacles rather than just listening to them talk about them ad nauseum. One of the things that I love most about Phil's approach is the way in which he uses the spiritual, or what he calls higher forces. Foundationally, he believes that a beneficent universe will move in as soon as you put yourself in motion, unlocking creativity and growth. His latest book, Lessons for Living: What Only Adversity Can Teach You, is a beautiful collection of essays from throughout his life about aging, hard times, and obstacles. It's equal parts moving and practical, much like Phil himself. Okay, let's get to our conversation. So I know you obviously are influenced by Carl Jung and shadow work and spirituality, but it's not Jungian, right? Or when you practice, is there that element to it too?
Jung obviously was a genius, and he saw things other people didn't see, especially that was basically 1900s, which was fairly, I don't want to say crippled, but it was limited. Anyway, we go two ways with this. When I learned Jungianism, which was up until that point was the best thing I had learned, the most effective and the most connected to reality. So once I saw that, I studied it and I loved it. It changed your whole relationship to your dreams for one thing. It also gave people the idea that there were generic forces or archetypes, he called them, that were like floating out there, and they applied to everybody. But nobody had said anything like before. So all props to Dr. Jung. However, I felt like where he stopped was where we had to start. And the reason for that was Jung, I think by nature, but also just the times, it was very passive. So it was a time of science. But science didn't supply what was needed here, because it's like, if you're up to here, you're doing well, you're doing unionism. There's a gap, and you have to jump over that gap. And the gap is the difference between understanding something, which is like cognitive and intellectual, versus doing something, which means you have to have an impact on the world around you. I haven't found that the union. And I don't want to characterize a whole, a million people or something, but I haven't found that not only didn't they know how to do that, they weren't interested. And the Jungians had this thing, basically it said, if you analyze the unconscious and you have some relationship with the unconscious, that's all you need to do. The unconscious will then resolve its own problems. And that's a form of self-regulation. I just don't believe. I've never seen it work in anything, in psychotherapy, in business, wherever you look, the idea of self-regulation didn't work too well. So, and I'm no great altruist or anything, but it was driving me nuts, because I felt we would get right up to the edge of something and we had no way to jump over. So anyway, so that was one part of it. And I think another part of it was there were currents running through society, and the biggest one of which may surprise you was the ascension of the female. It was just starting then, let's say early 20th century. And I believe there's certain things where the time has come. And at that point, they're going to be like the ascendancy of women is going to happen anyway, no matter what. The question is it going to be a good thing or a bad thing? It's hard to imagine it could possibly be worse than the way the males have fucked it up. But the whole idea of using the unconscious in a focused way with focused goals and focused tools, that was new. And I can't say that I was a genius and I figured out it. It just unfolded, piece by piece by piece.
I work with a Jungian, and I love the system, but I can also understand how, and I see it in myself, how we all get stuck in our stories, and when really we need the moral of the story, right? Or the underlying pattern unlock so that we can move forward. And as you were studying and as you were treating patients, were you hearing a universality of story? I mean, is that essentially where the tools came from? That we're not that different and many of us share the same essential patterning?
Yes, I would say definitely. That itself was a huge breakthrough, because it forced you to think about these things in a different way. If everything is connected on some level, and even if you can't quite figure out what the level is, it changes the whole world. And you're going to see the world's going to change so much in the next 10 years. It'll be more than the last 10 years of it. It seems even possible. And so there are two points there. So one is the Jungian part of interpreting the unconscious and what goes on in the unconscious and kind of hyper-charge. The other thing is tools. And here's the story with tools, at least as far as I'm concerned, which are the tools are the only thing that can bridge that gap from what you think and your intellectual or cognitive impression to something and what you're going to do about it. Any philosophy starting in the 20th century, any philosophy, not just mine, if it doesn't end with an action, it's not a real philosophy. Now, in the year 1600, you wouldn't say that, but in the present time, that's required, because it's an action-oriented universe and it's an action-oriented populace, you could say. So, it's much more complicated than that, but that's at least the starting point for me. The other thing about it is the patients loved it. They just loved it. And I think that's because it was allowing them to do things that they didn't believe they could do, that actually seemed impossible. Now, should I go into part X?
Yeah. Yeah, please. Let's talk about part X.
Okay. So you have the whole thing laid out in terms of where you need help the changes that have to be made, you know, etc. And yet, especially the first half of the 20th century, it wasn't working too well. At age 65, Freud realized psychoanalysis was failing, and he said, "My system is bogus." He called the death instinct. He said, "We all have an instinct built in not to grow, not to change." Mm. Now, people had hinted at that, but this is the first person to make a theory out of it. As I told you, I don't believe in self-regulation anyway. I've never seen it work once. But it seemed, at least for it to be possible, for a human being to take their evolution or their direction in life or whatever they thought their mission was and have some agency in it.
I think part X deserves a long explication, right? But is it equivalent to the shadow in some ways?
Part X is the shadow when it's been treated badly. The shadow is not a bad thing, even though it comes out as sometimes as inferior, harmful, weak, and very badly injured. But that in and of itself means nothing unless you understand the genesis of it. So what that means is, the best way to say it is self-esteem. Why are people so insecure? People I treat, there's no logical reason for them to be insecure, but they do. Now, the reason they feel insecure is everybody, me, you, Carl Jung, if he was alive, everybody feels insecure, and everybody has a part of themselves that they regard as inferior. Now, so what happens, if there is this part of you that you think is inferior, the weak spot, something you're ashamed of, etc., it's one of these things where if you believe it's true, there's a part of the human soul, we call it part X, that doesn't want you to have any kind of forward motion. Doesn't like it. It wants to render your life failure. It wants you to never reach any of your potentials. And it wants you to hate yourself, which is the biggest thing. So the genesis of the tools came from the idea we have to be active about dealing with this. We called it part X. But that doesn't tell you anything. It's just an X. Although it's amazing how many X's there are now in popular culture. Anyway, so there was something in each person. Part X is the shadow when you stop taking care of it. So you have North and South America. That's permanent. That's unchanging. So that's like a vertical line. Up here is North America, down here is South America. But you also have horizontal plane. And in that plane, it's the relationship between your shadow and you, or the lack of such, that dictates. If you treat your shadows badly, it becomes a war, basically. But this is very important. The terms of the war is not for anybody to get shot or get killed. In some ways, as bad as that is, there's a clarity to that. Part X is something that works on you most of the time when you're not aware of it. You're seeing or experiencing a part of yourself, but it doesn't want you to win, it wants you to lose. And that's very freeing for people because they feel less guilty. The idea that there's somebody out there that doesn't like me, that's trying to prevent me from moving forward.
It seems like almost a ternary system. I don't know if you would think about it like that, but if you think about how, and we can talk about higher forces as well, because I love that that's a dimension of your work. That's very important to me. But it almost feels like it's like higher forces, part X is like pace setting or blocking or stopping. And then the tools, rather than a stasis or a locked binary of paralysis, that the tools allow someone to move forward. And through that resistance to grow, change, set a new story.
Yeah, 100%. You can even go a step further than that and say the purpose of the tools is to counteract part X at the moment when they're trying to block you. And it has to do with possibility and impossibility. Part X is the avatar of impossibility. So part X is saying it's impossible. You can't do that. Don't even think about it. Another way to describe that is part X gives you a problem that you really don't need to have, and then it gives you a solution to the problem that makes it worse. That isn't the devil. I don't know what is.
I woke up at 2 a.m. last night drenched in sweat, throwing bedding off of me. Every pet was also on top of me, which probably didn't help. Many nights, I have the opposite problem, where I'm hunting in the hall closet for extra blankets in the wee hours because I'm freezing. In part, this is because my husband and I have wildly different sleep temperature preferences, and I'm cold because he's left all the sliding doors in our house wide open. But there's actually a solution I've come to learn. And I'm all about a sleep solution because we know how important good, uninterrupted sleep is for every facet of health. Have you heard about ChiliPad by SleepMe? It's a bed cooling system designed to revolutionize the way you sleep naturally. The ChiliPad bed cooling system is your new bedtime solution. It lets you customize your sleeping environment to your optimal temperature, ensuring you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. ChiliPad works with your existing mattress. It's a water-based mattress topper that continuously controls your bed temperature from 55 to 115 degrees. You can also choose a different setting than your partner, so you each get what you need. What I want? A cool mattress with piles of blankets on top. ChiliPad believes sleeping at the optimal temperature helps people naturally reach their highest potential physically and mentally. Visit www.sleep.me/thread to get your Chili Pad and save up to $315 with code THREAD. This offer is available exclusively for Pulling the Thread listeners and only for a limited time. Order it today with free shipping and try it out for 30 days. You can return it for free if you don't like it with their sleep trial. Visit www.sleep.me/thread SLEEP.me/thread because you're not just investing in better sleep, you're creating a better life. I want to talk about manifestations and I want to share a story from a tools workshop, which blew my mind. So I went as an observer more than a participant, and it was for creatives. I think it was for screenwriters or the like. And he was talking about the inability of so many people to put their creative work into the world. They'll just take it almost to the finish line and then stop. And then he asked everyone in the room, he said, raise your hands if when you do the dishes, you have to leave a pot. And it was amazing. Everyone's hands went up. And my husband, he's not a writer, but he's a creative. And that's a classic Rob Fismer move, is to let something soak. But in that moment, it was a beautiful illustration of how everyone, regardless of the content or the material, it's like the same thing that knocks them down or shuts them down right at that moment before they're complete.
This is so important. So one thing you're mentioning is a universality. Once you have the idea of forces, which most people can't really fully accept, but once you have that going, there's a connection, even if the connection is World War VI, everybody is subject to the same forces. That's number one. Number two, everything you do for your personal benefit, you want to write a novel, it doesn't matter. Whatever you do because you want to do it or you want a relationship with a certain person, etc., if that does not also have a piece of good stuff for the whole world, for the whole world population, it's very hard to succeed at it. Now, what's going on now, to an unprecedented degree, the Part X is getting stronger. The book that's coming out now is the compilation of ideas and our stories in it, which is very helpful. But the book was written, not all of it, but most of it, was written 25 years ago, 30 years ago. What does that mean? How can that? The world is changing. Those haven't changed. The philosophy hasn't changed. The world has changed. And that's where dealing with Part X now becomes urgent. It's not a hobby or a speculative philosophical argument. Why is it so urgent? Because the universe to be healthy needs to be one in one whole. If you want to call it a cosmic family, whatever you want to call it. Part X's job, so to speak, and part of its power to shatter the universe, or the human universe. And you know, you could see it the first time I think there was universal was the virus, because You could see people couldn't even leave their houses. It was a fractionation. It was like the sun was shattered into a million different pieces. But there was something good about that if you had tools. But see, if you don't have tools, you have nothing. When you're in a situation where your understanding has reached as far as it can go, then you have to have something that you can do next. And if you don't, you're wasting a tremendous opportunity. So, and the tools, we ended up with so many of them. And you think, yeah, there's probably a lot of repetition. There really wasn't. We had at least 40 solid tools. And the book is constructed so that you could actually do research on yourself. Because there's so many tools and stories in there, you'll probably be able to find at least one. Some people find 10 that applies to them. You say, well, why can't they read it in the book? Right? Because this is tailored to be doable or actionable right at the moment. And on top of that, we don't train people to try and win. That's not the goal. We train them to be disciplined enough to stay in the process.
To stay engaged, ultimately. Do you think that there's a cultural part X and then a personal part X?
Yeah.
Or that, yeah, the essay on ageism was so beautiful. And the way that I think you write about how the way that we're essentially polarized to value youth versus old people and wisdom. It's interesting to see it in this particular moment in time as well, the schism and the inability to reconcile that, right? And then you write about how, you know, you could talk about that as a cultural shadow or big cultural part X. We live in a very ageist culture. And then it trickles down into the personal, right? Where we come to despise our own aging process.
The thing about aging, obviously, it also has to do with death. And there's a very strong instinctual drive now to get them off the playing field or altogether. See, there's two universes. Now, universe one, value is denominated by numbers. And if value is determined by numbers, where you end up with money as being the arbiter of everything. Universe two is completely different than that. Universe two, value is not a thing. You can't grasp it and take it home with you. It's the ability to create systematically is what universe two is about. And it's the only thing it cares about. So I tell patients all the time, I tell them this, you have to decide which universe you want to be in, and then you have to choose it over and over and over again. And just to go back to the tools will work against part X. They will not keep working unless you keep using them. And once they work even once, I'll tell you, all of a sudden things begin to seem possible. If this isn't having an effect on you, and that's probably within 10 weeks, 8 weeks, it's not 10 years. If it's not having an effect on you, you should fire me. And this is how I got into the whole thing with the tools and trying to come up with ways that would break free of the limitations. Anything that's numerical, by definition, it's not that the world is what it is. It's not that. It's that your mind is absolutely encased and trapped. Can I draw a picture? Ooh.
Yeah, please.
Now, this is what I'm drawing. I'll show it to you in a second. That's called a birthday cake.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And it has three tiers. So the bottom tier is faith. Now, and this is very specifically not the same thing as proof, which we'll get to in a minute. Faith has to be chosen. There's no way it can be proven. If you're trying to prove it, you're putting yourself back in universe one, which drives on proof. So it's the first step of the birthday cake. Now, the next step is action, which just means just what it says. Because you have faith, can you see?
Mm-hmm.
So the next one is action. Then if you have enough faith to take an action where there's no guarantees of anything at all, if you have that faith, then you become confident. Most philosophies and people say the opposite. They want to have faith. They only want to take action when they've already have experienced a series of positive steps. But life doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
So the choice of having faith then allows you to act, which means it allows you to do things that ordinarily you wouldn't do, you wouldn't want to do, that would scare you too much. And then you become a confident person.
Wondering what to give your mom or wife or daughter or friend or godmother for Mother's Day? From someone who cares a lot about her bed and sleep, may I recommend something from Cozy Earth? In fact, becoming a mom and suffering through its required sleep deprivation is where my obsession with sleep started. So it's one of those gifts that might really bring things full circle. After all, women in particular are really impacted by sleep deprivation, which has massive implications for our health. Between the hypervigilance of motherhood and the hot flashes of perimenopause and menopause, we get a raw sleep deal. So let me tell you about giving women you love their best night's sleep ever. Let me tell you about Cozy Earth. Their sheets are made from viscose from bamboo, and they are indescribably soft. So soft, like a bed hug like no other. Now, I'm not the only mega Cozy Earth fan. Every single year since 2018, Cozy Earth products have been named as one of Oprah's favorite things. Oprah picked their best-selling bamboo sheet set because they're temperature regulating and incredibly soft, and she picked their joggers and their socks and their pajamas. Meanwhile, Cozy Earth doesn't just make sheets, they also make pillows, blankets, and more. Cozy Earth makes their products by sourcing responsibly. They use the best suppliers with an eye toward quality, responsible production, cutting-edge technology, and premium materials. They're also incredibly durable. They get better with every wear, and they have an enhanced weave that is guaranteed not to pill even after washing and drying. All Cozy Earth products can be returned or exchanged within 100 days and include an additional 10-year warranty against defects. This Mother's Day, treat mom to the luxury she deserves with Cozy Earth bedding and sleepwear and prioritize her self-care and sleep health. She deserves it. Don't forget to use my promo code THREAD at checkout for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. After placing your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows so they know that we sent you. Isn't this sort of the tool of forward motion too, that if you have faith that there's beneficent higher force universe and there's something that's trying to come through you, that if you start to move forward,
yes,
things will start to happen?
100%. We just call it the law of forward motion.
And yeah.
See, the whole universe is moving all the time. So if you're just neutral, you're already losing. Just to say, even with the thing, it requires constant time. There's a counter birthday cake. Now, this other birthday cake, the foundation is not faith, it's doubt. So I doubt everything until it's proven to me. And that's, and proof is the abandoned, worthless stepchild of someone demanding proof, believes in nothing until there's proof. And it was incapable of really looking at the world differently. So for most people, it's a fight between these two worlds. Now, what happened, and I think it happened about 2020, but it was near the pandemic, the rules changed. What's the difference between before and after? By the way, that difference is when we made the documentary. If we would have made that documentary 10 years ago, we would have come to see it. But it touched some kind of nerve. And it touched the nerve because it was a very convincing way to, not to get you to have faith, to be open to it. And from there, you get the idea that two human beings, any two, can force a bond between them. And once you have a bond, then anything becomes possible. Human beings do have superpowers. They do it only if they use those powers in a collective setting, is the best way to say it. Because I believe women are much more capable of making that leap. I'm not saying, you know, no, men can't, they can too, but to go back to Universe One, which is very competitive, it's very materialistic. Women are cynical and skeptical, about materialism. But at the end of the day, know on some level that they have something that the males don't have, which is they have direct experience of the most powerful force in the universe, the power that can create life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the stuff they do now to raise the level of opportunity for them is good. I mean, that's the external part. The internal part is to go all the way back to the beginning of whatever this is. It's to act as if they have faith in this creative process, because if they don't, we're going to be a blip on the screen.
It's interesting to think, just being a woman and thinking about the creative process too, that there's some inherent understanding that a creative system is ternary. Also, just thinking about the tools in that context, that there are these two forces that come together so a third can emerge. Whereas I don't think men, they're just a single force. And so maybe that's why it's so accessible. And I get that we live in a cynical, secular, highly materialistic culture. But as someone who works with creatives, maybe not exclusively, but many creatives, it's interesting that that idea of higher forces would be difficult, just because anyone who I think has been in flow or been in a state of high inspiration has to recognize that something else wants to come through them. Is that not a felt experience for most of the people you see?
You know, I would say for half of them, it's a fairly common experience. For the other half, they want it, they like to have it, but their habits aren't good enough. Women also, what I find is they have a natural respect for this whole thing that men don't really have. A male mostly, not 100%, but mostly wants dominance. And it's all me, and it has to be, it's about dominance. Now, women don't view that sort of power as really so great. See this triangle?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Okay, so that's a picture of a dynamic. In chemistry, there's a symbol for change. The lower left of that triangle is one point of view about anything. And the lower right side is the opposing point of view. Evolution and also our survival requires us to somehow put the two together. And you can't just say, well, be compromising, be nice to, you have to actually participate in this. And when you participate, you end up up here.
Yes.
You see?
Yeah, on top of the mount, on top of the triangle.
Yeah. So this is the way the universe moves. This is the way it creates. There's even a tool for that. You want me to teach you the tool?
Yes, please.
What would you say is a troublesome habit that you have?
Oh, I would say I have a self-soothing habit to do data entry, like compulsive tracking, like a self-soothing waste of time. I can spend hours just making lists. It's not a good use of my time.
I agree with you, because I do the same thing. Probably a different subject matter. So this is called category three. So close your eyes and see yourself and feel yourself in that position where you're addicted, you're compulsive, you have to have it, you're attached. And try to make the feeling of it as extreme as you possibly can. Okay, good. Now erase that. Now I want you to create the opposite feeling, even if you don't feel it very much, of complete letting go of anything and everything that's not efficient. And just let that part of you expand. Okay, stop. Now we're going to do the same thing again. But I want you to just go from point one to point two, you know, back and forth. That's good. Okay. Now, I'm going to tell you to do something. Don't do anything until you hear my voice. But once you hear my voice, I want you to do what I ask you to do as immediately as possible. Okay? Okay, now. Ooh, that was good. Open. Do you feel anything?
Yeah, that's very somatic for me. Like, I can feel sort of the anxious attachment in my chest and then the release into space. It's very much in my body.
Okay. So that's called category three. And usually, let's say category one is usually something angry, and category two is usually something passive, but you can cut the pie into any way you want to. The point is, you need a way to weave those two extremes. And that you can't do by thinking. Complete waste of time. If you're a meditator, it'll help you a little bit. But what you need to do is, when you find yourself looking for this purpose of today, you know, what came out, when you find yourself in a position where you're too far into one state or the other state, you want to use category three as fast as you possibly can. So you're combining two things that are opposites. You know what you get when you do that?
Flexibility or expansion? Relief?
Relief is good. That's probably the most. But what you're actually feeling is flow.
Mm.
And flow is the force in the universe that is two opposites. There's a lot of other tools that are similar. But at the beginning, it's just good to do something that people can feel. You know, I look at it like there's two centers of wisdom. One is here in the third eye. And most of what you get from the third eye area is worthless. Not everything, mostly everything.
I'm exceedingly careful about what I buy. Not only because I live in a 1,500 square foot house with children who sure have an awful lot of stuff, but also because I try to be conscious about everything I use. In short, I want to use everything I buy. In addition, thanks to a decade in the wellness industry, I am very keyed into product claims and product content. This is why I like Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus Multivitamin, which is clinically backed with high quality, traceable key ingredients in clean, bioavailable forms. I also like their Symbiotic Plus 2, which is a probiotic that's simple and effective. Ritual makes the most elegant multivitamin around. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus has everything you need, specifically 9 key nutrients in 2 capsules per day. Their unique betalutin oil is so slick it's actually patented, and their capsule has a delayed release design, which is brilliant and essential, to help make it gentle on an empty stomach. And Ritual studies their vitamins, which is not the standard in the industry. Ritual conducted a university-led clinical trial for their Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin to assess its efficacy. The results? It increased vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in just 12 weeks. As most of us are getting far less sun right now, vitamin D supplementation is essential. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is one of the few women's multis that's USP verified, meaning what's on the label is what's in the formula. Only about 1% of supplement brands on the market have the USP verified mark. It's also soy-free, gluten-free, vegan-friendly, and formulated without GMOs. Did I also mention that Ritual is a certified B Corp and female-founded? Nothing makes me happier than these two facts. No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/thread. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/thread for 25% off. I'm curious to know why the third eye, what you get in the third eye, you think is worthless.
The third eye is the center of intellect, logic, concise boundaries. You know, there's a clarity to it. And it's very good. It gave us signs. It's not like it's a bad. But for important human decisions, it's worthless. It doesn't help. Why doesn't it help? Because nobody, when they have to make a decision, ever has enough information. It just doesn't work like that. It would be nice if you did. If I said, well, we have a new job. Would you like to make 400,000 or 4 million? That's not a decision. And just to show you how the therapy part works, there's a cycle. It's called the instinct cycle. And I hope you don't mind these pictures.
No, I love them.
You see the circle on
the circle with the 4 numbers around it? Yeah.
That's called the instinct cycle. And the way it works is point number one is lower left. Is basically you're using your instinct. I want to buy this stock. I want to send my child to some kind of vacation, or I don't want to be friends. It doesn't matter. The details of it don't matter. your instinct, your intuition is telling you to do this. And it, again, it's the same thing. If it's instinct, there is no proof, there's no bottom line to it. And again, that's because it's an uncertain universe. So that's station one. Station number two is decision. I know what I feel, so I'm going to let myself be guided by that, even if I don't feel particularly confident. Number three, which is action. Now, people say to me, why do you need that? You already decided to do it, to take the action. Why do you have to have action twice? And the answer is very simple. People tell themselves a million things they're going to do, but they don't do them. So this whole undertaking sucks unless you take it to its completion. Now, its completion is station four. The keynote there is taking the consequences. It's not being right. Doesn't matter. You have to be able to take the consequences and be willing to take the consequences of your decision making or of your commitments over and over. Now, what happens if you do that? You might think, well, somebody else seems to have better luck than I have, or whatever it is. That doesn't matter because the reason it's called a cycle is it has to be repeated over and over and over. And the person who wins is not the person who's right the most times. It's the person who works the cycle the most times, which is totally different. And that it's just another version of the birthday cake.
And I can see how it becomes a spiral and has forward motion as you're taking action at a higher and higher part of that triangle or mountain. So thank you for your book. It's beautiful. And thank you for all your work. It's an incredible contribution to the world of psychotherapy to imagine a more active state because people need, as you talk about extensively, they need tools. They need to be able to move and not just rehash.
Yeah, you know, when I first started this, the very first year, I thought the whole thing was arranged so people wouldn't change. It was arranged specifically so you couldn't change. And it's so easy to do that because if a patient comes to you with a dire need, all you have to do is nothing and just sit there and you destroy the person.
It's true.
That's not therapy, that's life.
So as Phil mentioned, his newest book, Lessons for Living, is a series of essays. Many of these essays he wrote decades ago and then revised, as he says, only ever so slightly, which gives you a sense of how, I don't want to say classic, because I think that these tools are essentially, are quite dynamic, but that they continue to evolve and move as we change across time. Here's one moment from the book. Phil writes, "The great paradox is that it is not winning, but losing that reconnects us to higher forces. This is so antithetical to how we see the world that at first it seems insane. But if you focus not on what is lost, but on the state that loss puts you in, it makes sense. In an attached state, you've made the thing you're obsessed with into your ultimate reality. Regardless of what that thing is, your attachment to it puts you into a world where there's nothing higher than a thing. Attachment traps you in this world without higher forces. Only if you lose the thing are you freed from this empty world. Only then can you enter an alive world made of spiritual forces, not objects. That's the secret of loss. It allows you to gain a whole world." And we didn't get a chance to get into it, but what I hear in Phil's work and when I've engaged with the tools, it is this, I kept talking about a ternary system, meaning three parts rather than a two-part binary of good versus bad or right versus wrong, which is how our reality is often structured and keeps us stuck between two poles. And I think the tools are so special, and this idea of higher forces and part X, which is effectively the shadow or the unconscious, which is a pace setter to our progress and in many ways slowing us down, I think, so that we can metabolize what wants to come through us. But what he's articulating are really tactical ways to navigate a system so that you don't get stuck in, is this right or is this wrong, or who is right and who is wrong, who's the victim, who's the villain, and all of these scenarios. But instead, to quote Ken Wilber, are looking to transcend and include. In the tools, there's this third force, this ternary system of reconciliation, so that you are meeting the friction, and that friction is what compels you forward. I think it's quite beautiful and metaphysical, and I hope for many more books from Phil. If you like today's episode, please rate and review and tell a friend. You can find show notes and full transcripts of the episodes at EliseLunan.com. While there, please sign up for my Substack. I send a short note every Wednesday about topics that are aligned with this show, and a deeper dive most Sundays. Or follow me on Instagram at EliseLunan. And finally, if you haven't already, please consider picking up a copy of my New York Times best-selling book, On Our Best Behavior, The 7 Deadly Sins and the Price Women Pay to Be Good, available wherever you get your books. It's an exploration of how women have been conditioned for goodness, men for power, and all the ways we've been programmed to police ourselves and each other according to these cultural ideas of what it is to be a good woman. I'd also like to give a huge thank you to my sponsors who make this show possible. Please support them the way they support this podcast. This has been a presentation of Cadence 13 Studio. If you enjoyed this episode, please listen, rate, review, and follow Pulling the Thread. Available now for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Odyssey, or wherever you get your podcasts. I want to give a shout out to Phil Svitek, Lauren LaGrasso, Mary Kate McDonough, Ali Brockman, and the entire Cadence 13 team for producing these episodes, and to Valero Duvall for my key art. Take care of yourselves. I'll see you next time.